next Saturday, February 17th, will be the 38th annual Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series held at the Paul Robeson Campus Center on the campus of Rutgers University, Newark. This year's theme is The Space Between the Notes, the social life of music in Black history. And joining us on the WBGO Journal are two people very familiar to us and great friends of WBGO, the organizer of the Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series, Mark Krosovic, who heads the Clement A. Price Institute on Ethnicity, Culture, and the Modern Experience at Rutgers University, Newark, and the great jazz vibraphonist and educator, Stefan Harris. Stefan, if you're not familiar with his work, is a four-time Grammy-nominated jazz vibraphonist, the recipient of the prestigious Martin E. Siegel Award from Lincoln Center, an eight-time Best Mallet Player as determined by the Jazz Journalists Association, but just as important, all his work in the education of jazz. He serves as the Artistic Director of Jazz Education at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center. Stefan, you were just at the Winter Jazz Fest and Jazz Congress. How did that go?
It went incredibly well. This is a really inspiring time in the music, particularly because there's a stronger focus on social issues. For many years, the music was focused just on the notes and tones, but when we really examine the origin of this art form, it's always been an art form that has been there to facilitate amplifying voices of the community. So I feel inspired right now in the art form because I feel like it's hearkening back to its true origins.
And you're going to be the keynote speaker for the Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series on February 17th. And I know that this is going to be near and dear to your heart. How jazz education has evolved is one of the themes that you talked about at the Jazz Congress. Are you going to intertwine that a little bit in your keynote speech?
Absolutely. Education is a significant part of the shape of where the music is today. And there's some positive elements and there's some negative elements. Ultimately, I want to talk a lot about the origins of the art form and that it is an art form that is derived from a community, not the individual musician as it seems in terms of marketing, but everyone comes from a community. The barber, right? The people working down the street from you, they create the cultural environment that gives birth to great artists like Wayne Shorter and Sarah Vaughan. So I want to focus on talking about the people of the community and also immigrant populations and their role in contributing a narrative to our society that really is a blueprint for how we're going to survive these challenging circumstances dealing with diversity and inclusion.
Mark, you are head of the Clement A. Price Institute on Ethnicity, Culture, and the Modern Experience at Rutgers University, Newark. And now you've been in charge of this event for a couple of years now. Music is something that has always been a part of this event in some way, and jazz has always been a part. But you've gone overboard this year, and we're all excited about what is the theme for this year's event. Tell me how it all came about.
Well, actually, for the second annual Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series back in 1982, the keynote was Max Roach, and the theme was the sacred and secular tradition of Black music. And for years, we've had music on the list of things we wanted to come back to. And this seemed like a great moment to do it, in part because of all the issues that are going around with development and the role of arts in development that are very much alive in Newark. And also because the Institute of Jazz Studies has been expanding and has been re-energized. So, I should preface this whole conversation by saying, as a scholar, as a human being, I'm not a musician. I haven't studied music history. Sitting here already, I've learned so much just hearing what Stefan said. But I needed some help with this. So I went to my good friend Wayne Winborn, the director of the Institute of Jazz Studies, and I said, Wayne, we want to do music, but we don't want to do music in the sense of just the notes or the history of particular figures in music. We want to talk about the social role of music. And I'd love, we had Max Roach, I'd love for the keynote to be a musician, somebody who people will know. And he said, after about 3 seconds of thinking about it, I know who that is, Stefan Harris. And I said, I know who Stefan Harris is. And he said, have you seen his TED Talk? And I said, I had not seen his TED Talk. He said, go check out There Are No Mistakes on the Bandstand. Went and watched it on YouTube. And that's when I said, yes, this is the person that we need this year to talk about this.
The Space Between the Notes. How has it changed, let's say, from jazz in its real heyday to jazz in today?
Well, ultimately, music is a sonic manifestation of the ideals of a community. When you look at jazz in its heyday, it was a beautiful articulation of what was happening in the culture of a specific region, a specific time in our history. So if you take a look at the 60s and you hear the music of John Coltrane and you hear that crying out for love and for compassion and for wanting to find a way for people to come together, that was a direct reflection of the times. I think the music that we've been creating in the past decade or so is still a reflection of a culture, but it's been more of a reflection of the culture of the institution. The music has been institutionalized and we've lost our connection to community because we've been more obsessed about understanding the science, but that's out of context. So I think there are more creative musicians than in the history of the music. There's certainly more musicians than ever in the music. So it's actually a healthy time for creativity, but in terms of us understanding our role in greater society, we have some work to do in terms of making sure that we're creating in a context that has a positive social impact on our communities.
And I would imagine each individual musician has a different acceptance point of what's appropriate and the connection to the past and yet exploration and what's current, right? Everybody kind of has a different look at that, don't they?
Yeah, it's funny. There's a lot of speculation around what the tradition of jazz is. Sometimes when people think of traditional jazz, they're thinking of older versions of the art form. When I think of the term traditional jazz, I think of people coming together to tell their unique individual stories. So if you are not authentic, if you are just copying something from the past, you're actually not playing traditional jazz. That's never been a part of the tradition. It's never been a part of the purpose of this art form. This is an art form that was derived from a people who were oppressed, who did not have the opportunity to show their intelligence, to speak about their love, to talk about the pain that they were feeling in their heart. The one time that they would have been able to do that would have been in church on Sunday when they were left alone, and the way they did it was in song. And that's the cultural platform that the art form provided for people to tell their stories.
You're involved in the education of jazz. What needs to be done in a better way to get that message across?
Well, there needs to be an honest and open discussion about culture. When you look at European classical music, there's no question about where it comes from. You learn the language, you learn the posture, right? You learn every nuance, you're eating the foods. But when it comes to jazz, there's been a narrative that it's an art form that was created by everyone and in isolation. Now, the amazing thing about the art form, it's created by African Americans, but it's technically a platform for everyone to tell their story. So it's not that anyone owns the music, but if you don't acknowledge the cultural element of the art form, it's easy to obsess simply about the science, which is what we're experiencing. So I think there needs to be a much stronger move towards not only diversity, but more importantly, inclusion. When you look at the makeup of a lot of the departments of the jazz programs across the United States, from faculty to the student body, it's not really an authentic reflection of our society. And in particular, as it pertains to women, I mean, if this music is supposed to be the sound of our community, how is it that half of our community is not present in these institutions? So there needs to be a lot of work done with inclusion.
We're speaking with Stefan Harris, the vibraphonist and educator, who is the keynote speaker of the Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series coming up on February 17th. Also, we're joined by the organizer of this event. He is the head of the Clement A. Price Institute on Ethnicity, Culture, and the Modern Experience at Rutgers University, Newark, Mark Krasovic. Mark, now we know that this is a scholarly event. You have some scholars coming in to talk about music and the connection. Tell us a little bit about what you have planned.
Sure. So after Stefan's keynote address, we have Farah Jasmine Griffin, who's a scholar of African American studies, of English and comparative studies at Columbia University. The title of her talk will be Listening to Know, Black Life, Music, and Meaning. And I know Stefan is going to be talking about listening, too. We hadn't planned that ahead of time, but we'll have sort of a morning unit on listening. And Farah has written all sorts of books on African-American literature. She's written books about Billie Holiday. She co-wrote a book about the collaboration between Miles Davis and John Coltrane. She's a wide-ranging scholar. She's been in Newark before. She helped us commemorate the 50th anniversary of Amiri Baraka's Blues People a few years ago. She's wonderful. In the afternoon, we have Daphne Brooks from Yale University. And the title of her talk is Ultra Light Beam, Black Sonic Protest Politics at the End of the Third Reconstruction. So how she's putting together, I had to Google this, how she's putting together Kanye West, the idea of the Third Reconstruction, which comes out of North Carolina, and the Moral Mondays movement. We'll have to wait and see. But Daphne, I saw her at an academic conference a few years ago. And, you know, academic conferences, people usually sit behind a table and they read a paper. And I don't remember who she was talking about. I think it was either Nina Simone or Odetta. Somebody was talking about those people on the panel. And at some point, to demonstrate a point she was making, she started singing. And I had never seen that at an academic conference. And I said at that moment, we need to get her to MTW at some point because people will love her. And this will be her crowd. So, you know, in part, we came back to music because I wanted Daphne Brooks to come to Newark. So those are the two, you know, the two sort of scholars in the traditional sense. Stefan is clearly a scholar as well. And then the day will end, the proper program will end with a performance by Alexis Marast. Who most listeners will know, a teenage singer, songwriter, phenom, who just will, I assume, as she always does, blow the roof off the place. So it's going to be a mixture of performance, talking, lecture, singing. I'd imagine some dancing at some point. It'll be incredible. It'll be unlike what we've done before, but in the most exciting of ways.
And Stefan, I would imagine, too, that one of the beauties of the Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series is that it's a diverse crowd that comes, both age, background, color. So to have somebody like Alexis, somebody like yourself, people can see that this music isn't an old person's music.
Oh, absolutely not. This is an art form that is for everyone. It's here just as a platform for people to tell their stories, and that those stories come from every segment of our community. So,
what would you think is the most important thing that you want to get across to someone who is not familiar with jazz that comes to the Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series as they leave? What's the one message, if you could say, yeah, this is what I want them to be talking about on the way out?
Well, the biggest theme that I would want to impart would be about the power of empathy. It's through empathy that we understand that we are far stronger together than we are apart. And inherent in the way that a jazz ensemble functions when we're improvising is this core focus on empathy. Musicians spend the majority of their time, ironically, focusing on their ability to hear and understand others, not necessarily your ability to play the trumpet or the drum set or the vibraphone. That, of course, is a part of the regimen, but you first need to understand the context in which you would like to create. So we do what's called ear training. We focus on our ability to empathize with others a great deal. So I hope to demonstrate that. I'm going to have an ensemble with me, so there'll be a mixture of communication verbally, but also communicating through the music and demonstrating the impact that the use of empathy has on the music and our connection with one another as musicians.
You work with a lot of young musicians, and as the artistic director of jazz education at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, NJPAC, right next door here, Can you hear right away when somebody's got it?
Well, you can hear when someone has something to say, absolutely. But when you look at musicians that you think are really, really great, it's almost impossible to discern the difference between natural talent and work ethic. Because I found that the people that you really, really love, who seem like they're just exceptionally gifted, those are also the people who work the hardest. So I would never say that you can look at someone and sum them up. You never know how the work ethic will complement their natural inclinations.
Who was number one when it came to educating Stefan Harris? Who gets the most credit?
Wow, that's a tough question because there's so many people, from my mother and my aunts and uncles and my big sister. But specifically in the realm of music education, I met a gentleman by the name of Richard Al Bagley, who is the principal percussionist of the Albany Symphony Orchestra. I was a kid who played lots of instruments. In fact, I played all the band instruments, clarinet, trombone, flute. I played bassoon. I just loved music. And I took an audition for a youth orchestra, and Richard Al Bagley was the percussionist. I auditioned on percussion. And after the audition, he invited me to lunch. I was just in eighth grade, and I was like, I don't know who this guy is. He wants to have lunch. So I meet him, and I'll never forget. He told me in that moment, he said, for the next 5 years, I'm going to dedicate my life to making sure that you realize your potential. And that was a transformative moment. I didn't fully understand it at the time, but I think the seeds of my passion for education were really laid that day, to see another human being who was focused on using art to empower another person. Whether I became a musician or not wasn't the purpose of the way that he engaged me. He just challenged me in a way that none of my teachers in school did. No one that I had ever come across. The standards were so incredibly high. In fact, this guy, he's really a genius. He has a doctorate degree in physics in addition to being a brilliant musician. He tutored me in trigonometry in high school. So my private teacher in music. So
how did you two meet?
I took an audition, a random audition for a youth orchestra. I saw it. I was in the kitchen with my mom. It was Christmas Eve. I'll never forget. She was cooking, and we had a little black and white TV. I'm showing my age now. And this orchestra came up on television. I said, man, I want to be in that band. And the name came up, and I literally went to the yellow pages. I'm really showing my age now.
No Google.
And I saw, and there's no Google. And I saw it. I looked up the number, and I just called. I said, hey, my name is Stefan, and I want to be in your band. And when I went to audition, he was the person facilitating the audition.
Mark, you're an educator. Do we see the fire in young students that, you know, it's even easier now? You can have anybody's email or address at any time you want. Do they have the fire to say, I like that, I'm going to be in your band? Are we seeing people like that still?
I don't have music students, but I certainly see in students, you know, a varied array of things that they care about and are passionate about. It's sometimes, I think, a challenge to figure out what that thing is for them. Sometimes they seem really shy about it. Sometimes it seems like it gets lost, you know, in all the flood of information that comes their way. But somehow, you know, as a teacher, if you see that, right, if you see that spark, and I guess this gentleman that Stefan was talking about saw that, you know, it's your job to pull that out, to sort of foster it, to find a space, you know, no matter what class you're teaching, no matter what your particular discipline is, to sort of connect that student to the resources, to the teaching, you know, to develop that excitement and that passion. So you see it sometimes, and it's you got to be on a lookout for it constantly.
What would somebody say to you after this event that would mean the most to you, Mark, knowing that the music is not necessarily, you know, your field, yeah, but you're making a connection here, a big connection in many different ways that might expose people to something they've, you know, never even thought about. So what would be a compliment that maybe even a young person, or doesn't, let's not even put an age, someone leaving that says, hey, Mark, this, what would mean the most to you?
If they said something like, I learned something new about how to be in the world, that would be the greatest thing I've ever heard. I mean, Stefan before was talking about empathy, and I mentioned this TED talk before that really, you know, made me sure that he was the person that we just had to have at MTW this year. And to me, I mean, this is maybe my riff on that TED talk, but the what that is was all about for me was about, it was providing a model of living in a world of great difference. And how do you handle difference? You know, in this day and age when we're talking about walls and deportation, you know, versus, you know, do we build walls or do we build sanctuaries? This provides a model for how you deal with difference. You know, he has this wonderful line that I just think is incredibly moving, but it's something like, you know, the only mistake you can make on the bandstand is to not be aware, to not listen, to not be aware and accepting of the others around you. And I just think that, you know, that is such a great model for how people could, you know, move out of MTW and into the world. And if it registers with somebody on that level, I would be just beyond thrilled.
First time you heard a note, since we're talking space between the notes, Stefan, first time you heard a note that you said, this is the kind of music that I want to play. Can you take us back?
Wow, I'm such a curious musician. I'm in love with the science of music. So I think it probably would be related to the first time I played a note on a piano. And
how old were you at that time?
Oh, I was probably 5 years old. I actually taught myself to read music when I was 6 years old or so.
You know, we hate people like that.
I mean, I just loved it. But I remember hitting a note. I'll tell you, my family moved into an apartment and someone left an old beat up piano behind in the apartment. And in the bench of the piano were a bunch of books for children. So I took out the books, as before I could read in English, but there were pictures of the piano and it said C and it had an arrow pointing to C. And I looked down and I realized, like, okay, there are these two black keys and right at the bottom of the black key, this white key is called C. And so I ended up learning all my notes. And it was funny because I learned chords too, but I didn't learn it according to traditional music theory. I learned it according to math, if you will. Like a major triad, not to get too technical, from the mind of a child, I looked at it, I hit a C, I counted the notes in between the C and the E. There were three notes in between, and in between the E and the G, there were two. So I figured, well, if you hit a note, you skip three, and then you hit another one, and you skip two, you're playing a major triad. So I learned them in all 12 keys. So I learned that a major triad is 3-2. And then I eventually learned that a minor triad is 2-3. So I learned all my chords just by the number of notes in between, as opposed to when you're studying music theory, you have to memorize what are called modes, which is a far more complicated way of learning it. So it was really helpful for me to be curious, first of all, and I'm still just as curious about art and life now. I'm actually more curious than I ever have been. But it was really helpful for me to not only have teachers eventually, but to have plenty of space to explore. And if I could riff on the question that you asked Mark, what would I want? In a city like the city of Newark, this is an artistic mecca in the development of the United States, not just jazz culture, but American culture in general. I would hope that the people who attend understand that they are a part of what created this art form. And it's whether you played an instrument before or not, you're a part of the fabric that created the cultural circumstance to give birth to an art form that has changed the world.
So safe to say, we have to be pretty happy they left that piano at your old place, right? A lot of people that have gained great knowledge from you just because someone left a ratty old piano at home.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad that they did.
Do we know who that person was? Have you ever found out who left that piano?
No. You know what? Nowadays, you could actually do a little digging and find out.
Absolutely.
You know what? That's it. All right, I have another job to do.
Don't mean to pile on, you know, more work for you, but it would be interesting for you to find out, right?
Absolutely.
For them to realize what that has meant to the music world, not only as far as the music itself, but the education of the music, this person gave a gift.
Oh my goodness, there's a story here. You know, because that piano changed the life of my children.
There
it
you
totally
go.
Changed the trajectory of my entire life. I don't know what I would be doing if I didn't find an outlet for my curiosity. So this is a really interesting point.
I know some historians who might be able to help you look up some stuff.
There you go. Absolutely. Mark, give us the specific details. Obviously, this continues to be a free event, but where should people go and what are the times of the specifics?
You should go to the Paul Robeson Campus Center on Martin Luther King Boulevard in Newark, New Jersey on February 17th. Coffee and registration will be available starting at 8:30, and then the program proper begins at 9:30.
You know, even though it's something that's been going on for 38 years, I always like to have people remember who Marion Thompson Wright was, because it gets lost in the shuffle at times. And people even say, you know, MTW, they might not even be aware of who this woman was. Give us a brief synopsis of her life and why it inspired Dr. Clement Price and Giles Wright to come up with this series.
Well, Marion Thompson Wright is, as we say, sort of arguably the first professionally trained woman historian in the United States, the first PhD. And I think what really inspired Professor Price and Giles Wright to sort of use her as the model for their work, and not only the lecture series, but all of the work that they did, was that she was a scholar who was dedicated to a particular place, who was deeply rooted in a community, and appreciating a deeper history of that community. So for her, she wrote, pioneering works in the history of Black New Jersey. The Education of African Americans in New Jersey was her major publication. And so I think just her dedication to, you know, the community writ large, whether it's the Black community, her dedication to understanding the deeper history of New Jersey, this was a sort of an uncommonly committed, engaged African-American historian. And that was, I think they found her really inspirational. And Clem, you know, spent years researching her life for a planned biography. And once his papers are properly archived and we can, you know, discover all the things that he discovered about Marion Thompson Wright, I think there will be a new appreciation and a wider knowledge of her and her work.
We're speaking with Mark Krasovic and Stefan Harris about the Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series, February 17th on the campus of Rutgers University, Newark. Having a Master's of Music degree in jazz performance at the Manhattan School of Music, the day you got that degree, did the music sound different to you?
Not at all. I definitely appreciate the time that pursuing that degree afforded me. To be able to have two solid years to focus on studying jazz. My undergraduate degree is in classical music. I actually didn't start playing jazz until I got to college, and I just fell in love with it. It was Charlie Parker's fault. But around my junior year, I realized that my real passion was for jazz and that I had something that I wanted to say that I wasn't going to be able to articulate in classical music. So I decided to hang out for the master's degree and just live in the practice room.
You already talked about the fabric of this city, but what is it about Newark that makes you so connected here, that you want to stay here and be a part of this scene?
You mean besides my family that's here and
exactly.
My wife who's from the city of Newark?
but well, you could go anywhere. Just because she grew up here doesn't mean that you would have to stay here. Why have you both chosen to make this your palace?
Well, this is a city of immigrants, and it's a city that, as it's growing right now, I'm incredibly impressed with the attention that the leadership is paying to ensure that people are not being gentrified, that everyone in this community is a part of what is getting ready to happen as the city continues to grow. That is not the case in most major cities in the United States. So I find that incredibly inspiring. It's a value that I hold dear to my own heart. And also there's an element of people like myself, you grow up in a community, you go off to Harvard or Manhattan School of Music or whatever place you go to study, and a lot of times you take that knowledge and you end up giving back outside of your own community, which is not creating a pipeline for other children like yourself. So ultimately, I want to make sure that I always remain a part that I remain a link in the chain and that I'm not displaced, in other words, to another community. So without the people who came before me, I wouldn't have had the opportunity. And if I'm not here to hold it all together, ultimately, we're going to lose the voice of that next generation.
February 17th is an important date for Stefan Harris, but August of 2018 is also an important date. His 11th album as a leader, his band Blackout. Stefan Harris and Blackout, Sonic Creed is coming out. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Sonic Creed, we just recorded maybe a couple of months ago. I'm holding the record for a little while because I'm running the jazz program at Manhattan School of Music right now. It's a record that's called Sonic Creed because it's important for me to make music that's about something. And each of the songs is about something that I hold dear to my heart. It's about family. It's about gentrification. It's about respecting our elders, our ancestors. It's about elevating the voices of our community. So that's why I call it Sonic Creed. From this point forward, and I'd like to think that it's always been the case in my music, but I'm even more committed to making sure that my music is about a set of values that I believe in and that I, most importantly, believe will help others.
You mentioned your kids. Has that changed you as an artist?
Absolutely. I don't sleep as much, first of all. No, I have two amazing kids, 8 and 5, Langston Ellison, obviously named after great writers. We have high standards in my household. It's funny, you end up having less time, but you become increasingly focused. So I don't have as much time, but when I do sit down to work, I work with an intensity that I never have before in my life. And also there's just that sense of, I think about a sense of legacy and what I'm going to leave for my children. And I think about touring, and for a traveling musician, you spend a lot of time away from your family. So once I had children, I reevaluated that completely. And I actually don't tour nearly as much as I used to. And for me to be away from my wife and my children, it has to be an opportunity that is helping other people. And it has to be clear to me. Otherwise, I'd rather stay home with my family and be of service to my community.
You mentioned a key word there, legacy. And that's something that you're carrying on, Mark Krasovic, at the Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series. The legacy of not only Marion Thompson Wright, but the legacy of Giles Wright and Dr. Clement Price. So you've done a wonderful job with this series. And we expect the new topic coming up, The Space Between the Notes, The Social Life of Music and Black History, will be another great event. I like to see you smile. When Stefan's talking, you've been smiling the whole time here in the studio. You get great joy out of listening to people with passion.
Absolutely. And listening and learning. You know, I think, you know, last year, MTW was about urban history, which I guess if I had to locate myself professionally, I would say I've been an urban historian. So I kind of knew something about it. And this year, I feel like I'm taking some extra joy in MTW because I'm sure there are people much more educated musically than I am in the audience, but I'm, you know, in some ways the ideal audience member. I'm somebody who doesn't know much about this. And so everything Stefan says and tells me and the other speakers and performers of the day is likely to be new to me. And, everything that I've been reading in preparation for this and watching and listening to, it's just all new. And I'm remembering, I'm sort of repossessing the great joy that I hope, everybody finds in MTW.
February 17th is indeed the date for the 38th Annual Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series. Mark Krasovic and Stefan Harris, what a great time to have you in here. And thanks for all your work that you do in your respective fields. And we continue to wish you success.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Doug.